Hi, Danelle.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing good. I just got an email that I'm a finalist for a Book Excellence Award.
Well,
I don't know how much these are, how much weight is put into these, but
you just recently got one, right?
yeah, I got Literary Titan, and that one it has gold and silver, so I got gold. So I'm like, okay, well, at least there's, a designation. This time I got finalist and not winner. So that tells me at least they're looking at something.
Yeah.
And they said there's thousands of entries from around the world, and there's a few hundred winners or whatever, because there's multiple different categories. So
Right. So do you actually apply for those awards? Oh, okay.
yeah, you pay to enter. I think all the book awards you pay to enter them, and that's why I'm not sure how much weight is actually given to them, because it's kind of like you're paying for it.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm practicing saying your last name again. Tinninehouse.
Yes, that's perfect.
Wow. Danelle Tinninehouse Black. It's so nice to have you on Living on Purpose. It's been great getting to know you. And of course, I have your book right here. Suddenly, A Widow's Story of Unexpected Loss and Healing. And it's funny, there's a hummingbird on the front cover, and it's also in the upper corner on the back cover. And I've had your book now for a while since you got published this year with Ignite Press. I hadn't really tuned into that hummingbird, and I think that is such a nice touch.
Yeah, there's a story in the book about the hummingbird. So,
Yeah. Let's start with the serendipity of how your book even came to be. I mentioned Ignite Press. Everett O'Keefe is the CEO and founder of that, and he's written a book called The Power of the Published. One of the many things he says in there is about how you can use material you already have to fashion it into a book. And a lot of people are daunted by writing a book. I certainly am. I have a lot of material, and here I am helping lots of people bring their books to publication, and I know how much goes into it. And so if you already have material, though, like you had all these
yeah.
blog entries, and that's what you put together.
Well, Everett went to high school with my late husband, Patrick. And when Patrick died suddenly, he was hit and killed while riding his bike. Everett was one of many people who reached out to me on Facebook, and I became Facebook friends with him. And this was nearly 8 years ago. So over the years, I became aware at some point that he had a publishing company. I was blogging as a way to process my grief, and I received a really positive response from my followers telling me that it was helpful that I was sharing my story. And so that encouraged me to continue. At some point along the way, Everett wrote something about his late business partner, and I realized that his business partner was the husband of someone I had been in a grief group with. His business partner was John Writing, and Lisha Farrell Writing, I had gotten to know through a grief group. So I thought, wow, that's a coincidence. And then last spring, I was at my mother's house, and she's been married for a few years to a man who's a former teacher. And my stepfather, Donald, told me that he had recently gotten this letter from one of his former students, along with a copy of a book, telling him how he had inspired him to write, and he wanted to share that now he was an author, best-selling author. And before he even told me, I said, I bet I know who that is. And so he showed me the book, and sure enough, it was Everett. And so I asked him if I could borrow the book and took it home and read it and was just really inspired by the story. I mean, he goes into, several different suggestions for writing a book, and one of them is using content that you already have. And in the book, he offers a free consultation. So I met with him, and, it's not free to use a hybrid publisher, but I really wanted to do it, but I was agonizing over the money. And then I thought, what am I thinking? You know, I have all of these things that have lined up. I think I was meant to work with Everett. So I started the process and started pulling together all of my material and was frankly overwhelmed. You know, what direction do I want to go in with this? And in speaking to Everett, he told me he could put me in touch with some content editors, and he gave me a couple of names, and you were one of them, Lynn. And you reached out almost immediately, and I just had this strong feeling of connection with you, and we connected right away, and I never even talked to the other person because I just knew that I was meant to work with you.
Well, thank
too.
You.
Yeah, the whole experience has just been wonderful. It's been really interesting to see the whole process of publishing a book. And I've just got to work with some great people, and I think I've learned a lot. And it's just been a great experience for me.
Well, right on. Well, thanks for taking us through how that all came around. Yeah. Well, it's been really interesting for me too. Do you feel like you've had a bit of a co-author with Patrick in the Spirit Wings?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, it must have been a shock for him too, to die suddenly, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And you have two daughters together with him, and you've since remarried. So a lot has happened in this 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I also went back to school, and I'm a professional clinical counselor now. So my life is, of course, completely different, as you would expect, but some good things have happened too. So,
yeah, it's really a lot to take in, how much we sort of take for granted in life, and how much can change. And then, you know, all in the same life, right? You were in the health insurance industry, is that right?
Yeah, I worked for a health insurance company for 22 years.
Wow. And never anticipated you'd be doing what you're doing now.
I thought I would retire from there, which I did. I took early retirement, but I thought it would be many, many years later. I never really, you know, had the motivation to go out and look for anything else. It wasn't that I particularly loved the job, but I was, you know, happy enough there, and I had a network of friends and enjoyed a lot of aspects of the job. But when your life changes, and especially because my husband was a physical therapist, and after he died, a lot of his patients reached out to me to share the stories of just what a difference he had made in their lives. And it made me really sad that he was not going to be around to do that anymore. And that really got me to thinking about how I wanted to spend the rest of my life. And I really wanted to do something where I could help other people. And, you know, one way was through writing and sharing my story. And then another was going back to school to become a counselor and help people in that aspect.
Well, it sounds like you're enjoying that.
I am.
It's rewarding, and you know you're making a difference, as you say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just with one aspect of that, on the back of your book here, you specialize in grief and trauma, and you're certified in eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR. Can you tell us what that is?
It's an evidence-based treatment, and it was invented by Francine Shapiro. And she discovered one day she was walking and thinking about a problem, and she was scanning the horizon. And she noticed as she scanned and moved her eyes back and forth, the problem didn't seem to be as much of a problem. And so, being a psychologist, she started researching and doing some studies and testing different things. And she came up with EMDR, and it's been perfected over the years. And, you know, there's a lot of new techniques. But basically, the way I describe it to people is, when I was a child and my mom asked me to clean my room, I might push some things under the bed. I might shove things in the closet. You know, I didn't particularly like cleaning my room. It wasn't really pleasant. So I just would get things out of the way. And that was fine as long as she didn't, you know, look under the bed or open the closet door. Because if she did, all of that was going to come tumbling out. And when we have traumatic experiences, they're not pleasant to think about. And so a lot of times people will just push them out of sight. And that's how they cope with it and function. And it can be fine for the most part. But our memories are stored, you know, not just in visual images, but a lot of different ways. Scents, sounds, physical sensations. And so you can just be going through life and all of a sudden you have something that triggers one of those memories. And you may not even know that what you're experiencing is a memory. All you know is that all of a sudden you're in fight or flight mode and you're not sure what to do. And so EMDR, we believe during rapid eye movement sleep that that's when most memories are processed. And so what EMDR attempts to do is to process those memories the same as other memories. So then they're stored in the appropriate way. So you can still access them and, you know, pull them up, but they're not going to be as traumatizing.
Wow, that's really interesting. When you were talking about her experience of looking at a distance, right? Like, I remember 4 years ago when we were all told to stay in our houses, there was something I heard about the benefits of looking at a distance. And I remember driving to the country, which is not far from where I live, and looking out over this, like there was a horse field and then hills and trees and horizon beyond that. And just with that in mind, I had never thought of it until that was pointed out, that there's good benefits in looking at a distance. So It's really interesting you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like perspective, right? It's getting perspective.
Right. Yeah. And I believe through my training, the reason that some people have a more difficult time with traumatic experiences than others, you know, has a lot to do with, you know, a lot of factors such as, you know, growing up in a healthy environment with good attachment figures. I feel like I had a lot of those tools in place that enabled me to go through this experience without a lasting, you know, impact and respond with resilience. And not everyone has that. And I'm, you know, well aware of that advantage or privilege that I had. And so, because even having all of that, it still was a very difficult experience to go through. And I'm aware that a lot of people don't have the kind of resources that I have as far as friends and family and, you know, even financial resources. And so to be there for someone in that difficult time and try to help them with some of those things that they don't have is really meaningful to me.
Yeah. So do you find that a lot of the people you're working with have had sudden loss in obviously different ways, but is that a big part of your client base?
Yeah. Initially as a student and before I was fully licensed, I worked mainly with Medicaid clients, which is the health insurance program for low income. Where I live in California, it's called Medi-Cal. A lot of people in, you know, a low income situation are there for a variety of reasons, and a lot of them had some type of trauma in their background. Even then, it doesn't have to be like what we visualize as trauma. Sometimes it's something as simple as in elementary school, the teacher called upon someone to read and they mispronounced some words and the whole class laughed. And for whatever reason, you know, it could be due to what was going on in other areas of that person's life, that really stuck with the person and it created a problem as an adult in speaking publicly or, you know, even speaking just in a meeting with a few people. And so I find traumas like that, as well as traumas that are the result of multiple incidents. And, you know, those, of course, are a little bit harder to process, but probably some of the most fun ones to process are the little ones that are harder to identify and are just one incident. And those usually are pretty easy to get resolved.
So those are fun. Did you say they're fun?
Yeah.
Because they're quick and meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of it with getting in touch with such things is the willingness to see them, perhaps. I just thought I would share briefly an experience I had recently that really surprised me. I'm working with a team of people in person, which is, you know, a new thing, because a lot of my team and work with people is through Zoom. And I see how we recreate situations, right? And so you can kind of transpose your parent relationship onto a couple, right? Like if there's stuff to be resolved. Anyway, I needed to talk to the woman, but she was in her office, which was in a separate suite in the house where I had only been in once. And I was afraid to go and knock on the door. And I'm going, what is that? Right. And I had to get the guy, her partner, to come up with me to knock on the door and let me in. Like I couldn't do it on my own. And I thought, wow, what's going on? Like, what is holding me back from doing that? And I realized that it reminded me of when we were young and my mom, her fourth child, only lived a few days and then died. I was 5 and then 4 and 1. Those were the ages that she came home to the children. Dad was working a lot and she spent a lot of time in bed. And often I was in a lot of trepidation to knock on the door because I didn't know what to expect, you know? And so I didn't put it together until I realized I was having trouble, like even asking, like, I need to talk to her. Should I text her? Like anything but go to the door, right?
Yeah.
And so I shared that with them and, you know, somebody else on the team because I was so surprised. I didn't expect that at all. It was helpful to see that.
Yeah. And that's great that you were able to figure that out. Sometimes people will come to sessions and, like, if you were relaying the story, they might say, you know, I got to the door and I just couldn't knock on the door and I have no idea why. And so that's when I would say, okay, well, tell me, what were you feeling in that moment? Where were you feeling that in your body? And then I would encourage them to just let their memory float back to a time that they felt that way before. And they might say, oh my goodness, when I was young, this happened. And so that's great that you were able to come to that on your own. But that's the kind of thing I was talking about that sometimes come up just organically in therapy.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it too is like it will take you back, right, to a childhood memory. And when you're a child, you don't have the options that you have as an adult. So there's that feeling of there's no way out but through. It could be why, as an adult, I've often just walked out of a room or walked out of a situation because I can't and I couldn't then.
Yeah. And it's, you know, just to clarify, this isn't repressed memories coming up. It's just memories that can be triggered by something and, you know, not really realizing it. Another example I give, and this isn't really traumatic for me, but the first funeral service I attended was my grandma Janelle, which I mentioned in the book. And she was, you know, a popular person, and there were just tons of flowers there. And so anytime I smell like a large amount of flowers, I immediately think of Grandma Janelle. And that's because that was an intense feeling. And, you know, there's a lot tied to that. So for me, like I said, it's not traumatic because it just triggers memories of her. But, you know, it just showed me the power of like a scent associated with a memory.
I'm just thinking about that first day when Patrick didn't come home and you were wondering where he was and you had your work schedule coming up, your daughter was heading to school, your other daughter was going to school somewhere else. So it was like a normal day, but then after the new pieces come into play, you have that context then of, wow, you didn't know the day before that the following day was going to change, everything was going to change. How did you help yourself with that transition that was so unexpected and sudden? And how do you help others with that kind of putting together? I suppose part of my question is just, being present and being grateful in the moment, not taking things for granted because you don't know what could change. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge shock. I mean, it actually kind of had a few hours where I knew, but I didn't know. So that was, I'm grateful for that. I didn't get, like, you know, the phone call or anything like that. It was sudden, but it wasn't like that sudden for me, at least. For my oldest daughter, I had to tell her over the phone, and it was sudden for her. So she had a different experience. Yeah. So it was just that night, I just thinking, gosh, I'm not married anymore. Like, how did that happen? Yesterday I was married, today I'm not. Like, it's just really a lot to wrap your brain around. And so I did a lot of things, like developing new routines. Number one, to tell myself, okay, I'm still here and I'm moving forward and I'm okay. And, you know, it was things like I went and got the mail every day, which was just simply across the street from my house. It wasn't a long way, but that was my little routine that I did that was something normal. And, you know, I don't know why it was so helpful to me, but just the fact that, okay, I'm still here, I'm able to go get the mail, and, you know, I left the house. That kind of thing. And then I noticed, you know, as time went by, that if I made little changes to the house, that was a reminder for me that he was gone. Not that I needed a reminder, but, you know, your brain plays tricks on you. And so for me, it was, he's gone and I'm okay. I'm still here and I'm, you know, able to do things and make changes.
Mm-hmm.
So there were just a lot of things like that, just reminders that he's gone, I'm still okay. And I tell people, one thing that was really important to me was connecting with other people who had been through similar experiences. And I had kind of I was, I guess, fortunate in a way that I had a really good friend that had been through something very similar. And actually I went through it with her because I was right there with her that day. And I talk about it in the book. And that happened over 10 years before Patrick died. My friend Sonia lost her husband, Kevin, you know, so I had Sonia immediately to talk to. And then, interestingly enough, my hairdresser, Stacy, lost her husband in a motorcycle accident. So I immediately had Stacy to talk to. She knew exactly what I was going through. And so I encourage people who are going through a loss to, you know, somehow if they can connect with someone that's been through a similar loss, whether it be, you know, loss of a parent or loss of a child, it's really helpful just to see, okay, this person went through what I went through and they're okay. They're still living their life. They're getting out of bed. They're doing their job, you know, whatever it might be, because there's days where you think, how can I possibly get out of bed tomorrow and continue with my life when it has changed, you know, 100% from what I thought it would be. And then for me also, I had my daughters. And so that was the main reason why it was very important for me to keep going. Yeah.
For sure. So yeah, the people you mentioned, that was fabulous that you didn't have this immediate gap. You had people to go to. How did you find it with people who couldn't relate to what had happened and maybe didn't know how to relate to you in this new situation? How was that?
Well, it was really interesting, and I don't think I've written about this, and I'm just going to say, if any of these people happen to hear this, I don't blame you for this. You had good intentions, but a few weeks after Patrick died, or maybe a month after he died, my daughter went to prom for the first time with a group of friends, but she got all dressed up, and she has a very close-knit group of friends from these great families, and those families really reached out and supported me so much when Patrick died. And so one of the moms decided to have parent prom. that night. And it basically was just, you know, get together, potluck, eat, just kind of be together. I knew 100% that this parent prom was for me.
Oh.
That's the only reason we had it. I knew that 100%. I went to parent prom. I was the only single person there. Everyone else was in a couple. And no one talked about Patrick. And I think that that's because of this phenomenon that people think, if I bring up something sad, it's going to remind them and make them sad. And the truth is, it's never not on my mind. And so not talking about it just makes it really awkward and difficult. And so I tell people, err on the side of just bringing it up, because they'll let you know if they don't want to talk about it. But, you know, what's worse is just pretending like nothing happened, because when someone's been through something traumatic, that's what's on their mind. And so at least, you know, try to open the door and give them the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. My belief is that when we die, we're just invisible. We're still there. And so it must be a little concerning, you know, to Patrick and other people who've passed to not even be mentioned or acknowledged when clearly they were very much a big part of the situation when they were alive.
Yeah. And I may not be remembering it 100%. I'm sure some of those people may think back and think, oh, no, I think I brought up Patrick. But, you know, my memory is just, wow, I'm going here and these people are just surrounding me with love, but no one's talking about Patrick. And that really, for me, talking about him was really therapeutic and enabled me to process it. And that's why I started blogging and basically just poured my heart out. And there wasn't anything that was off limits, because that's what helped me process it.
Yeah, I was going to just say that writing, just starting the blog, My Life After Patrick, that's what you called that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been really therapeutic to just have that place to go to and share it. I mean, publicly too, right? I mean, people were reading that. So that must have been really helpful. And I think you encourage people to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. I do with my clients. And, you know, some of them, of course, don't want to put it out there publicly, and that's fine, but get your feelings out. And another reason I think it was very helpful for me was I could look back on that a few months out. I could look back at what I initially wrote in my written journal that I didn't, you know, share publicly until recently. And I could see, oh, wow, yeah, that's how I felt then, but I'm feeling better now. You know, this has happened and things are a little better. So I was able to see, like, oh, yeah, I remember how hard it was back then. And these are the kind of things that made it easier. So it helped to grow in my journey too.
Chart your course.
Mm-hmm.
Do you imagine writing another book?
I do. I've thought about it. You know, as a counselor now, it's possible that I could write something that's more counseling specific, or, you know, specific just about grief. One thought I've had, the girls and other family members, we like to imagine how Patrick would handle a particular situation. So I thought about writing fiction just about, like, what would Patrick do? You know, just funny stories that I could imagine him doing. And, you know, that's just kind of a thought. I really haven't spent any time on it. But yeah, I've thought about it. Now that I've gone through the process, it seems more doable that I could actually do that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that this is a common situation for people who've had a sudden loss or a loss of a spouse, especially in various ways. Looking back over your process and what you're aware of with clients, perhaps, how does it work to let go enough to be open to a new relationship?
Well, I mean, for me, it was easy because I never at any point had any concerns that Patrick would not want me to be happy. I knew from day one, basically any decision that I made that I was agonizing over, I felt like he was part of that decision with me. And I just really had that peace that whatever I do, it's okay. He's going to support me just as he always has. And so that was comforting to me. And I just knew that I'm the type of person that enjoys, you know, having a life partner. And I didn't want to think about spending the rest of my life alone. I did know that I would have to find someone that was comfortable enough with themselves that they could open up to everything that came with me, which, you know, part of that was Patrick's family.
Right.
You know, people will ask me, oh, do you still keep in touch with them? And I always laugh. I'm like, of course I do. That's my family. Why would I not keep in touch with them?
Right.
And so my husband, Bruce, probably got to know Patrick's family, maybe even before my family. Early on, you know, some of the first events that he went to were Tenine House family things. And the Tenine House family has welcomed him. He's considered one of the kids, just like I am. And I'm not going to say, okay, it's 100% easy for Bruce. Of course, it's a challenge for him, you know, because he is an only child, only grandchild. So just having a big family is something that's new for him. And so just, you know, coming into my family would have been enough, but he also has joined Patrick's family. And it's been a challenge, but, you know, I have to say he has been a trooper. And I really do feel that, you know, he enjoys being a part of both families. And the other thing I would say is I knew when I was dating, you just get a sense if someone's going to be comfortable with you talking about your spouse. And so I didn't shy away from that because I wanted to know right away. And I did have, you know, there was someone I dated for a little while that would make comments about, oh, well, I know I'm never going to be Patrick. And so I was like, yeah, you're not even going to be in the running for that because clearly you're not comfortable with that. So that's the red flag that I needed. And Bruce, you know, was comfortable right from the beginning. So
interesting.
Yeah.
You know about Dr. Laura?
Yes.
I interviewed her, and the way that she got into radio was that there was a question that this host put on, and she just called into the show. The question was, would you rather be divorced or widowed? And she said she'd rather be widowed because people will bring food. And it is so different. I mean, of course, that person is still going to be an influence in your life, whether you divorce or are widowed. And yet, in a way, it's a cleaner break when you're widowed than if you're divorced, which can be, you know, really traumatic and really influence your relationships in mm-hmm. all kinds of different ways, especially if there's children or whatever. But to be separated in such a final way with someone who you would have spent the rest of your life with and that you love, who loves you, you know, it's a completely different experience, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm cognizant of that because I do have clients that have gone through divorce and Bruce is divorced. And so, although I have never been divorced, I have, you know, now the knowledge of what that was like for him. And, you know, he mourns the loss of the life he had hoped to have. It's different, but I honor that grief as he honors mine. I had kind of this profound realization at one point that, wow, I kept all of my marriage vows. You know, and it, not everyone can say that. And it's like, you know, I wish I didn't have to keep all of my marriage vows, but I did. And then the other realization was every marriage is going to end at some point. And a lot of them are going to end in death. And that's just the reality. So there never was going to be any better way. It was just a matter of who was going to go first. I thought at the time, wow, he would have been much better suited to handle this just as a single parent, which, you know, granted, our children were mostly grown. Yeah, it just, it was going to happen one way or another.
Yeah, so many insights, eh? You just said that you wish you didn't have to keep all your wedding vows. Is that what you said? What did you mean?
Yeah, and I just meant that, that till death do us part. I wish
Oh,
that didn't have to happen.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I guess you wouldn't have imagined even sitting here talking about this.
No, I just, what's really ironic is Patrick was one of the most healthy people I know. He would be the first to say, well, I don't really love exercising, but he was so devoted to exercising and was a fanatic about it and would tell people how important it was and all. And it's so ironic that exercise literally ended his life. If
Yeah.
he hadn't been out there riding his bike, so it was not something that I had ever really even thought about. I had thought kind of briefly. Another story I mentioned in the book is that I read this book, Radical Survivor by Nancy Saltzman, sometime before Patrick died. I don't remember when exactly. And I think it was one of those Amazon first reads that you could get for free. And that's how I found out about it. But Nancy lost her husband and both of her sons in a plane crash. So she lost her entire family in one day. And just reading that story, I at the time I thought, oh my gosh, I could never, I would just curl up and die or something. Like I don't think I could survive that. And so the day that Patrick died, I was thinking about Nancy. And she was kind of my model that okay, Nancy Saltzman lost her husband and her sons, and she is still living and moving forward. And I still have my daughters. I can do this. And so that was really an inspiration for me. And, also inspired me to tell my own story because I knew firsthand what an impact it had on people. And I was fortunate that I eventually reached out to Nancy on Facebook, and we're now Facebook friends and have had, little conversations here and there. We follow each other, but I was so glad that I was able to tell her what an impact her story had on me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so many things are hard to imagine, and yet to be willing to keep moving forward and find meaning beyond the parameters that you thought you were in. It was before I connected with you, but there's a lot of cyclists in the countryside just around where I live. And a number of years ago, there was one who was hit and killed, and he wasn't carrying ID, and so it took them a while to figure out who he was. And since then, I'm pretty conscious when I go out for a walk or whatever that I have some ID on me, to track back if anything happens. It was an interesting part of your book talking about how Patrick was so averse to modern things.
Yeah, there's a product called Road ID, which has little bracelets or anklet things that have, contact information. And I'm sure there's even more products now with GPS technology or whatever. But I had one of those because I was a cyclist. Patrick was an anti-cyclist, so he rode his bike, but he didn't consider himself part of the cycling community. So he didn't want any of the, jerseys or tight shorts or anything like that. And he wasn't going to put that road ID on. And so the day he was hit, he had no ID on him. He had his phone with him, but I think it was initially thrown. They recovered it, but they didn't know who he was. And I, at the time, my nephew was a member of the local police department. And so I reached out to him and he contacted them. And that's, ultimately how
Yeah.
we started the process. But then a few years ago, one of my good friend's brother was hit and killed, and he actually had a road ID on. And they never looked for it or found it or anything. So I don't know that it would have made a difference, but definitely I think it's important when you're out like that you have some kind of ID on you so that they're able to, notify your family.
Yeah, make it easier. And so, what about the person who hit Patrick? You hear about people going through all kinds of emotion around blaming and forgiving, and how has that ended up for you and your family?
That's always going to be a difficult thing. I don't know how I would react if I, ran into that person. I mean, of course, well, I guess I do know how I would react. I would never be mean or vengeful or anything like that. He was, a fairly young man around the age probably that my daughters are now. And I think I was able to determine early on, well, the detective shared with me, I think he had been a foster child. He had had a very difficult childhood, basically didn't have the types of privilege that I grew up with. And for work, he was doing what he called ghetto taxi, which was basically like Uber, but just for people that knew him and had his phone number. And so to do that, he would stay awake for hours or days on end. And I think to enable that, he was using methamphetamine. And so from what we can tell, he was up for, multiple days, and they looked at his cell phone records and saw the times of calls coming in and all. There wasn't enough meth in his system for that to be the cause of the accident. And part of the reason that's an issue is California, where I live, doesn't have a intoxication level for methamphetamine. We do for alcohol, but there's no level for drugs. And, there hasn't been a determination of how do you define if someone is impaired by that. And so basically what was concluded was that he fell asleep and left the road and hit Patrick. He said that, Patrick swerved in front of him, and I think that that's what he wanted to believe. The evidence was there that Patrick's bike was going straight forward in the bike lane, and you could tell because there was tall grass on the side of the road, and you could see the path of the car that it drifted off the road. And I met someone who stopped at the collision site and was able to share with me that the driver was visibly distraught and actually prayed with them over Patrick's body. And that was comforting to me, and it really kind of humanized him. I've never had any contact from him. I met him, or not met him, but I saw him in court. He didn't give a statement or anything. And I understand when someone's a defendant, they really can't reach out to. I think one of his family members said something at one point that, I just decided that I can't live my life with that kind of anger. And I've seen, I know of at least one other cycling widow whose husband was hit and killed by a drunk driver. And that person, every couple of years has to go back to court for, there's parole hearings, and she has to gather letters. Every time I see her post something, I'm just so sad for her that that has to keep coming up, because mine, although it was a misdemeanor and he spent about a year in a treatment program and then he was released after that, to me, that was at least something. And in my statement, when he was sentenced, I just basically said, if you want to atone for this, then do better, make something of your life, make a difference. And after that, I was able to move forward, and I honestly don't really think about him a lot, because I don't want to have that kind of anger and hatred in my life.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's not going to bring Patrick back. You'd rather think about Patrick and the life you had. Yeah. Well, Danelle, this has been a very interesting tour with you. Thank you for sharing. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention, or your website, anything you'd like to add?
My website is danelleblack.com. It's DANELL and black like the color.com. My book is available anywhere you get books. The difficulty is that you have to put in my full name, and Tenayan House is just a mouthful. So if you're having trouble finding it, if you just go to danelleblack.com, there's a link there that will take you. And I believe it's one that then you can choose which site you want to purchase the book from.
Good to know.
I actually just ordered a microphone so that I could start recording the audio to make it available via audio. So that will be coming at some point. I'm not sure how long that's going to take me, but.
Yeah, big project, audiobooks.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're popular and I've had a lot of people ask about it. So,
yeah, that's
it's,
great.
You know, something that I wanted to do. So,
well, congratulations on a lot that's happened after a big shock in your life. It's inspiring and hopefully encouraging to many people.
Yeah, that's my greatest hope, is that it can basically give someone hope that life can go on.
Well, I wish you and your family and everybody all the best. You have a big group behind you supporting you, which is wonderful.
Thank you, Lynn. And I appreciate you. And I want to write another book just so I can work with you again.
Oh, that's very sweet. Well, I would welcome the opportunity. So let's keep in touch.
Okay.